why did the arrival fallacy happen originally? Part of it is computers and IT systems used to cost a fortune, and it was horrendously difficult to change them and release new changes. And because it was so difficult to change them, people only did it once every 3 years. Okay? And therefore, they filed everything in, maybe once a year. They piled it all in. They went through an horrendous change release that, you know, they had to be ready for and back out if it didn't work. You know, huge cost to the company. Therefore, like, you know, one bus a year, everyone's going to be on the bus. The arrival fallacy. We're going to be there in a year's time. We're planning for it everywhere. If instead, because of the reduction in cost of delivery, because of that, now you can do a bus every week, suddenly it's nothing like as bad to try and organise the arrival fallacy problem because you can just get on the next bus. They're every, and they're low cost to deliver. That's what the difference is. The problem in the industry is as IT has become low cost to deliver, we've kept the high cost method. Mm. Not the low-cost method.
Yeah,
it does. That makes sense.
Hi, and welcome to another podcast on enterprise agility brought to you by the Agility Crew. Our crew consists of leading experts in the industry who give their knowledge freely to invest in the skills we all need. Now let's join our crew for this week's episode.
Well, and no Ricardo. Ricardo sent us a message. He's deep in headaches because he's doing a big planning event tomorrow, which is partly why there's three of us, so that when there's only two of us, we can still do something. So, Ricardo, I know you'll hear this later. Good luck with tomorrow's planning session, anything we can do to help, et cetera. So what's today's topic then, Eric? What's on your mind? I love these because you bring
something up. All right, thanks, Ian. Well, I've been thinking about the arrival fallacy trap. This is something that we've discussed previously, actually in one of your training sessions with Coaching Agile Transitions. And, you know, I've been wondering about it in my personal life and especially how we see a transition into our work lives. So I would love it if, you know, we can explain to everybody basically what this is. You know, from a higher standpoint, it's that attitude that I will be happy once I've arrived, but I won't be happy until I get there. So basically losing the focus on the importance of the actual journey and only focusing on the destination.
You're quite right. I mean, you know, happiness is a journey versus happiness is a destination. Or perhaps more accurately, if I use that happiness analogy, happiness is a choice during the journey to establish that, you know, cook with what you've got is one of the phrases that we'd use here. You know, where are you? What you're doing? So as you may well know, Eric, because we didn't get a recording this weekend, I was off doing a walking holiday with the good lady, her outdoors. I was also outdoors with her, and she'd set this thing up where we did 8 miles per day. Now, for some people who are listening, 8 miles a day is nothing. For me, it was a bit much. But here's what was interesting. She'd set herself 8 miles a day for 3 days, and every day we started, what she wanted to do was, you know, make sure we got to the end at the time we'd agreed to be at the end of it. And I was like, hey, this is a fantastic view. Let's stop and look at this view for a while. Let's get some benefit out of this moment. We've arrived somewhere. Fantastic benefit here. Some stunning views. And she said, well, we'll be late. And I went, late for who? It's just us. You know, we can get to the, we can go for the meal an hour later. It's not going to kill us, you know. And, you know, we did one morning with this fantastic view with stepping stones and just stunning views near Bolton Abbey, if anyone's in England. At the end of it, we sat there for half an hour watching and thinking. And, you know, I was sort of like letting it get on my eyelids and just enjoy the moment and the breathing and everything. And she finally said, oh, you're right. This, we do it. Ed Stafford, who wrote a fantastic book who I've met called Walking the Amazon, he walked the whole length of the Amazon in South America.
I've
Stafford,
heard of him.
2S in Stafford. Video of him. Yeah, he's a nice guy. We met a few times because there's a certain kind of event where Ed's the right kind of speaker. And I contact Ed and go, do you want to come and talk at this thing? You know, Keystone event kind of thing. So you get videos of him finally arriving at the Atlantic coast and everything. And, And we were doing a conference, and at the conference I said, Ed, now you've done this fantastic journey, what's the one thing you've really learned? And he said, I should have spent more time enjoying the moments I had with all the tribes and not worry about each night making sure I was up at the right time to start the next day. As I look back now, because I think when he said this to me, it was 4 years after he'd finished the actual walk. He said, as I look back now, I'm really annoyed with myself for not seizing the moments and getting the value out of everything. That's the arrival fallacy, you see. You're only happy when you get to the Atlantic Ocean. I first came across this also in Christian writings where, you know, there's a lot of, if only I could do this kind of thing with my life, if only I had a better husband or a better job or this or that. And it is the classic sort of not enjoying the moment of the walk and finding the benefits of it. So, I mean, that's the general idea of the arrival fallacy, that you think what's going to come at the end is what it's worth for. And is that a good enough definition for us to work from?
I totally think it is. And I can really relate to Ed Stafford, right? Ed Stafford. Yeah, I remember that journey. I was following that because I'm, myself, I'm a long distance through hiker. In 1999, I through hiked the Appalachian Trail, and definitely from a very visceral experience, I know what it's like to fall in and out of the arrival fallacy. Like just being on a schedule, having to get, through a section of the Appalachian Trail. And for those of you who are listening who don't know, the Appalachian Trail goes from Maine to Georgia in the eastern United States. It is one trail that goes through 14 states. It's just under 2,200 miles long. And a through hike is doing it all in one shot. So it took us like 7 months. People do it a lot faster than that. But we purposely took our time. And so, and by having that mindset from the get-go, we're just going to take our time. We're going to enjoy this. We, for the most part, avoided the arrival fallacy trap. But invariably, you fall into it when you just get into a section that you just have to grind through. And, I think when it comes to what we do with, our agile work that we do with our teams, at the team level, at the organizational level, it can be easy to fall in and out of that. And so one of the questions I had for you, it just struck me, Ian, is like, do you feel that the arrival fallacy trap is like a remnant of command and control management?
That's a great question. I think it's a remnant of traditional management project philosophy, which is, if I summarize that in two, let's take a typical 18-month project, yeah? If I summarize the arrival fallacy problem that creates, is the first one is there's only benefits at the end of the 18 months. I'm paying every month. Let's say you have a team that's 2 million a month to run for 18 months. You're paying out 36 million before you get any benefit. So if you think of a J curve of investment, it goes right down and then it comes up and then it gets to the level point again where finally the bottom of the curve is where the 36 million is. And then let's say this initiative gets you 3 million a month. You then start making money and then the curve goes above the original line and goes up. That's the classic J curve that you can look up. Google J curve, you'll see them. The point of the J curve problem is that lots of companies, first of all, the first thing they do is they believe we'll do this entire investment before we get any benefit. Yeah. Now, this is really silly. Imagine you went to a restaurant and said, can I arrange, please, for you to look after my meals every Saturday for the next year? And how much will it cost me? And they go, oh, well, that'll cost you this much. And you say, here's the money. And they say, lovely. If you come back in a year, we'll give you all the meals. Right. It's just a silly idea, isn't it? But when we put that like management hat on, we suddenly go, yeah, all the benefits will be at the end. And there is even loads of talking in all kinds of prints and MSP manuals, etc., about benefits realization post project delivery. I.e., one of the things you have to do when you deliver a project is make sure you get the benefits afterwards. So that's the traditional way of thinking. The modern new agile way of thinking is take that 18-month project, scrub it into what can I do in the next couple of months? Not what work can I do, but what can I do to get some benefits?
How can I deliver value fast therefore, if you imagine, to the people I'm serving?
Yeah. Yeah, how can I deliver some value earlier than 18 months, you know? And this is the conversation that any change agent needs to have all the time with people they're working with, which is, I mean, it's 18 months away. Great. But what can you do in the next 3 months that gives me some value? Because I want to give you some money, but I'd much rather. I have a game that you've never played with me called Theme Park, where you build essentially Alton Towers or any of the big theme parks or Disneyland. And there's two versions of it. In one version, you get a fixed budget to spend every month. And at the end of the year, you're measured against the other players, other teams. There's another version where you get a certain amount of money and what you've got to do is get some of the games online, some of the rides online in order to make money, and you can reinvest that money. And the purpose of the second version is to get you used to the idea of early benefits. You know, what can I do that creates a good benefit? And it is this arrival fallacy that we don't get the benefit until the end. And out of that comes an entire project management theory about, let's take the analogy I had of 18 months, 2 million a month spend, that's 36 million. The entire management control discipline is about spending 36 million correctly, not getting value.
Yeah.
You know,
It does make sense, and it makes me think. I think this ties in really well with, one of our recent podcasts where we talked about the importance of creating psychological safety at the C-suite level, at the leadership level. I mean, this is, this really, I think, in order to set a company up in a healthy way for an agile transformation at the enterprise level, you're really going to need to address this old school way of thinking right away so they can understand where you're coming from when you're working with your teams. Like, we're going to try to get you, we don't exactly know what it's going to be, but we're going to try to get you benefits quickly for this investment that you have. You're not going to be we're not going to be just like reporting to you at the end of 18 months and be like, here it is. You're going to be getting consistent updates from us. We're going to be transparent and visible with you about, where we are going with this huge $36 million dollar investment or whatever it is.
I mean, there's two kinds of benefits. There's soft ones and hard ones. And the hard ones are, it's out there making us money, The soft ones are things like delivery confidence. We're proving we can deliver some things. We've tested the whole pipeline out. We know it works. Let's say we were in a car hire business, and we had a project to create 100 fleet car hire business, and that was the project. And that included the admin, the booking, the maintenance of the cars, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Let's say that was a project that we got to do. And someone said to me, we need this amount of money to do the project. And when does it launch? And he says, we'll get 100 cars in 8 months. My immediate question would be, when can we have the first car?
Yeah.
Because if we've got the first car in place, we have tested our processes. We know they work. We've got feedback from a customer and we're making money. Because we've got a car that people can hire off.
It's not the huge fleet, but you've started and you're like testing it out and you're proving your concept and you're delivering benefit.
That's right.
Yeah.
Absolutely right. And there's loads you could learn from that. For example, you might put a car in the fleet that, you then work out requires high maintenance. It's just that type of car. It requires lots of hard maintenance compared to others. Thank goodness you know that with one car before you bought
100 of
them. Yeah,
like you committed to the entire fleet.
Therefore, you can go, exactly, and then you can go, okay, well, we've worked out this one car is actually high maintenance, so we need to make the rest of the car something else. Or you could go, well, why don't we make 5 of this one available and 5 of this one available, and then in 3 months, measure all sorts of data points, such as what do customers really want to buy, what's the maintenance like, what kind of condition do they come back in? I mean, I hadn't thought this through, Eric, but you get all the principles.
I totally get all the principles. This is really like an umbrella-style issue you know, you unfurl this and it covers a whole wide range of agile topics that we have to be concerned with. But like hitting it at the leadership level, I think is really important. But, you know, because it's so intrinsically baked into traditional business culture, and as both you and I know, that's what we as change agents are working to unmoor and redock the agile ship, where this outdated, sinking, decaying management style has been set up for, you know, centuries, really. So it's not easy, right? So what do you think, Ian, from what you've seen, like, what do you think the hallmarks of a team that is falling into the agile fallacy trap are? Like, what are the red flags that...
Arrival fallacy. Well, there's one thing to say before I answer that question, Eric, which is the extreme of you don't get any benefit mm-hmm. till the end is one end. But the other end of that, and there is some of this in agility, unfortunately, I think, is people who say, we can't tell you anything about when you'll get benefit. You'll just get it when you get it. I mean, literally, I've seen teams that are like, you know, very almost arrogant, going, you know, like, yeah, we'll tell you when there's some stuff for you marketing team to work on. Till then, leave us alone, please. Let's get on with the job. And that's another, that's the other end of the mistake, really.
Yeah, that's good. And that actually ties into conversation I know you and I have had before, and I'm sure is on a lot of people's minds, is like, how do you measure that? How do you give some metrics? How do you allow the marketing team to feel comfortable with the direction that you are going, so they can do their jobs, right?
I don't know if we've done a podcast yet, but you know what you've got to do is decouple as much as you can the team planning between them. So you know, if the marketing team needs 6 months to buy all the advertising space across the city, you know, you've got to be able to commit to something that's likely to be around at the right time. You probably want to deliver that early, so that it's in place, ready to be switched on, but delivered. So, you know, there's a lot you could do there to get that sort of sorted. But before I went into the red flags, one of the red flags is nobody will tell you when any benefit might be available. Yeah. And I mean, my view on these things is when you have these 18-month projects, 36 mil, yes, there is a plan. There is an idea. You do know when you're going to get it. There is a financial understanding of benefits. That's all true. The good news about agility is that can still all be in place. But week one, I can now say to the CFO, the good news is that plan, instead of me telling you 16 months into it whether it's worked or not, I could tell you in about 6 weeks whether it's going to work or not. Because I'll have some velocity on the team. I'll understand the backlog. I'll know exactly whether we're going to make it. In fact, I had that very problem with a CFO who just simply didn't believe me when I said, you know, after 2 months, we can't deliver this in 18 months. He said, don't be silly. You can't possibly know that yet. I went, no, we do. Let me explain why. And he still didn't believe me. He literally said to me, go away and come back with a different answer. So 2 weeks later, I took the COO with me to the meeting and went, look, you're a spreadsheet guy. Here is the evidence. This is what the team's going to do. Everything is sized. So we're not going to finish in 18 months. We're going to finish in 24 months, or give me another team now if you need that 18-month deadline. And it took a while to convince him of that.
How long did it take him to convince him? Did the deadlines really start having to really slip? They had to feel some pain?
Well, what's interesting about this is I think the CFO was tuned to the idea that a commitment from us of 18 months realistically meant 24 months, but we wouldn't be telling him that yet. And, you know, somewhere in his Excel back pocket would be the rest of the money he needed. Yeah. You know, there's a famous saying on this that goes, the first 80% of the budget is spent in the first 80% of the time. In the other 20% of the time, you spend the other 80% budget, you know.
Yeah.
You know, so... Red flags. So red flags is the question. What are the red flags about this arrival fallacy happening? And that's one, which is you can't realistically show progress, valuable progress, okay? So the problem with some elements of the traditional methods, like shall we spend a month gathering requirements? Nothing wrong with that. Shall we spend 3 months designing it? None of those actually create value, really. They show that there's some soft value, but... The problem with those methods is, let's say there's a requirement gathering exercise and there's a requirement there that is impossible to meet. but you don't know that yet. You sign off the requirements. You start doing design, the requirement, you're trying to meet that, you do that. After about a year, you work out that there was, it's a bit like the Titanic, there was a requirement months ago that hit us below the waterline that means we're sinking, but nobody noticed. That's the sort of, that the problem with the arrival fallacy is it allows that to happen. Yeah, your red flags. So what red flags that they're falling into it? One is that they simply won't demonstrate value to you early enough. And just, I just think as a change agent, any leader, you've just got to, you know, look people in the eye and say, okay, I'm not going to feed you any more money unless you find some value, which is part of what lean portfolio management and all of those techniques of quarterly budget funding cycles are really all about, which is breaking the arrival fallacy into much smaller chunks of mini arrivals, you know? I'm not going to give you the next 6 months unless you can prove this 3 months really worked and gave us some value of some description. I prefer the value to be proper, hard value, right. Money, you know. People have downloaded the app.
Yep.
You know. People are doing things that are creating money for us, even if it's not a lot of money, you know. The first dollar is always the hardest, isn't it? So that's the kind of red flag I see. And sometimes what I also see as red flags are lots and lots of mid-layer people reporting problems but not solving problems. That seems to be another thing I've noticed happens a lot as red flags. Have you seen any red flags yourself? I mean, you got experience.
I think it's one of the red flags I've seen within my teams is just a complacency with the system that with the processes that we've put in place, you know, and not being willing to talk about exactly what you said about is like value. Like the last company where I was at, value was a big issue. I think some of us knew that the products were not profitable, right? But we weren't really worrying about it because it was so heavily investor backed that, you know, the investors were just pouring money into this cloud software that we were building. But it really wasn't profitable. And there was a lack of transparency between the departments. And I think that's because of that lack of transparency, there was assumptions on the engineering side that, oh, this is just fine. You know, we're progressing just fine. We've heard we're not really profitable, but everybody is saying that it's looking great. Well, fast forward, I mean, that was definitely, you know, so we got stagnant. And I think that's what happens with arrival fallacy. You can just get into this, you know, you can get into an unsatisfying grind. You're not really questioning things like you should and asking for that value. And then when it came to it with, you know, my former company where value became very important, like the investors basically did what you were just saying, Ian, they're like, you need to show us some value. We're not going to give you any more money. The spigot got cut off. And this was really real life, hard hitting example. They went through two rounds of massive layoffs. Like gutted the company. So
yeah.
You know.
I mean, what's the red flag there? The red flag there, I think, is the right kind of questions are not being asked. And sometimes the right kind of questions aren't being allowed to be asked by the people that can answer them. So, you know, that's a classic, which is, you know, the business, you know, ask for stuff that isn't going to make money and then spend all their time complaining about the lack of delivery, not the fact their original business idea doesn't make any sense at all. That's another reason, by the way, if you're in the sort of delivery function, is to short-term chunk and put something out. So I think I may have mentioned this story before. It was another 18-month project to do a piece of work to do with queue busting in branches of Telefonica in England. And, you know, big project, lots of very, very high, powerful, hippo kind of people associated with it. And I sort of went, yes, so we'll do this, but the first thing we'll do is in the next month, we'll put we'll put a prototype out into the stores and see what happens. And that was to learn something about how customers reacted to the prototype. And we learned that they reacted to it in a fundamentally different way from what the basic business assumption was. And so we came back from that with the question to ask for the product owners, which is, this evidence says that the entire project doesn't make sense to customers. What are you going to do about it? And instead of me having arguments, hypothetical arguments about whether this made sense or not, was this going to make money or not, I had practical evidence that wasn't me arguing the case from my opinion, but evidence, good empirical evidence. You know, we put this into 62 branches, and in a week, two people reacted to it. For this to make any sense at all, it's got to be over half the people who go into the branch. The footfall in those branches was this amount, therefore the reaction to this product was actually 0.0002%. There's no reason why that's not a sample that's valid. So, you know, does the project make any sense at all? And so my tip for people who are delivering is, you know, get some evidence, get some real evidence that this is the basic assumptions of this product are valid.
Yeah, yeah. That's...
You know, a classic on this is you know, we want to deal with a SME market, a small business market. You know, we want to sell 10 phones to a small business together. You know, that's our aim here. And, you know, instead of doing that, why don't you find out how many times someone walks in and asks for 10 phones? Because what you'll find is nobody walks in and asks for 10 phones. They're either asking for hundreds and hundreds of phones because they've got some big, you know, big business that needs to do that, in which case it is a specialist project, or they're ones and twos, which you can handle as consumers.
Right. Yeah, I think that's great. I mean, I think you answered with like one of my closing questions I wanted to pose you, Ian, is just like what are your favorite techniques at breaking out of the arrival fallacy trap? And I think my favorite one is right. You just said that, give them evidence, you know, don't be afraid to experiment early to gather evidence and then present it.
Yeah. And in fact, if I was on the delivery side, don't even ask permission to go and get the evidence. Just go and get it. Just go and get the evidence and say, look, we did this and here's the evidence of that. And, you know, react to the evidence, please. You know, loads of companies these days, data is everything, isn't it, really? The other thing is definitely as a leader, I would ask, even for a project that I believed was going to create a lot of money, I would still want to do something that gave me evidence that that assumption was correct. What have I learned? You know, an awful lot of like lean startup theory is all about that, which is get some evidence early that you're right. My friend who does lots of strategy, he puts it the other way around, which is really nice, which is he says, for this strategy to be successful, what needs to be true? And can we go and find evidence that that is true? And can we continually check that it is still true throughout the project? Because if it isn't, we need to stop. Which is really interesting.
Yeah, that is interesting. Okay.
How do I break it? By forcing people into smaller planning cycles. That's why the arrival fallacy is lost if you arrive every week.
Yeah, it's as simple as that. I think it does go back to the basics of, you know, some of the Scrum Agile basics that we all know, or, you know, as Agilists know, and that, you know, we're trying to help leaders understand more and more through our work here. So, yeah. Agreed. All right.
Okay. So let me ask you the question at the end then, Eric. What particularly struck you out of what we talked about today that you might want to say was a bit of a nugget?
Well, I think particularly just the importance of proving that you're right and getting some evidence for it early on. You know, you have a good idea, that's great, but what evidence do you have to back it? And then making sure that you have that iterative feedback loop and you don't ignore it, right? I think the other thing that struck me too is just the importance of having these kind of the conversations with the leaders that say, look, you don't have to wait to the end for us to show you value. I'm going to start showing you value very quickly. And very quickly, we'll be able to help you determine whether or not you need to pivot, whether or not you need to stop, or we should just keep going on, you know, so, and assure them that this is okay. You know, this is just, this is the way of agile thinking.
Yeah, that's great, mate. I mean, why did the arrival fallacy happen originally? Part of it is computers and IT systems used to cost a fortune, and it was horrendously difficult to change them and release new changes. And because it was so difficult to change them, people only did it once every 3 years. Okay? And therefore, they filed everything in, maybe once a year. They piled it all in. They went through an horrendous change release that, you know, they had to be ready for and back out if it didn't work. You know, huge cost to the company. Therefore, like, you know, one bus a year, everyone's going to be on the bus. The arrival fallacy. We're going to be there in a year's time. We're planning for it everywhere. If instead, because of the reduction in cost of delivery, because of that, now you can do a bus every week, suddenly it's nothing like as bad to try and organise the arrival fallacy problem because you can just get on the next bus. They're low cost to deliver. That's what the difference is. The problem in the industry is as IT has become low cost to deliver, we've kept the high cost method. Mm. Not the low cost method.
Yeah,
it does. That makes sense.
So those are my nuggets. Thanks, Ian.
All right, good and brilliant. Another good episode, I think. Ricardo, we miss you. What are we up to next time?
Well, I think next time we're one thing that we were talking about is maybe how we scale the percentage quality index. You know, taking it from the team level to the organizational level, you know, looking at what the similarities are. I think that would be good. After that, not quite sure. We've got a lot of ideas on the board, plus some potential guests that we would want to bring on as well. We've got some exciting stuff with that. And then, of course, love to have Ricardo back when he is, like, breathing again from his intense. See how that goes.
All right. Well, we'll leave it there. Thanks very much for listening. See you all next time.
That's it for this episode. Why not check out our back catalog of previous episodes and show notes? Go to enterpriseagility.info to connect and sign up. See you next time on the Enterprise Agility Mastery Podcast.